Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this April 21st, 2023, 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're going to speak with some of the kids from Lincoln High School's musical, The SpongeBob Musical. We got some of the cast members joining us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Got a great interview in store right now. On the phone joining us, State Senator Patrick Teston. Good morning, sir.
Hey, James. How are you?
Doing all right. How you been?
Well, I can't complain. The only thing I can complain about is that, you know, this time last week, I was out in my yard doing yard work in shorts and a cutoff, and then 2 days later, I'm on my back deck in a winter coat and boots, firing up the grill. So
Wisconsin,
springtime in Wisconsin.
Yes, we are excited about having some nicer temps next week. That we're looking forward to. That might be able to get back in the yard for a lot of us. I got a couple of different places I wanted to start with you, sir. The first place I wanted to start, how's your vehicle doing? Because you've been up and down the state the last month. Since the last time we talked, I got to admit, did you have to get a new vehicle? Is it doing okay? Because you've been everywhere.
Yeah, no, vehicle's doing great. In fact, actually, it was had to buy one late last fall after the running around the state in the primary for lieutenant governor.
I killed
my previous vehicle, but... No, it's been good. We've been very busy. The Joint Finance Committee, we've been going around the state to get public input on the state budget process. And between that and being down in Madison, taking votes on the floor and committee work, yeah, it's staying busy. This session, we're rolling up our sleeves and doing what we can to put forth and craft a state budget that puts the state on the right path.
Recently, you spent some time in beautiful Eau Claire. There was a budget listening session there. What were some of the headlines that came out of that for you?
Yeah, I think one of the big headlines for me within that specific event was that we had a lot of school districts from rural areas of the state who came out and expressed their hope that for some of our districts that per pupil spend lower than a lot of districts around the state, that we could give them an increase. And, you know, I think that's been a takeaway. And I've had conversations with Tom down in Adams Friendship, their school district administrator, who I'm sure is breathing a huge sigh of relief after their referendum went through earlier this month. But I do think there's a case to be made. And I do think that's going to be a conversation that we have over the course of the next several weeks as we take a look at where our dollars can best be spent. I do think for our districts that have been financially sound and, have been very prudent with their budgets, but are being hamstrung by some of these, the revenue caps, that we give them some increases so they can be on the same page as some of the districts that spend more per pupil. Because our state constitution lays it out pretty clear that, every child in the state of Wisconsin should have equal access to high quality education. And right now there's a disparity with the way the funding formula is set up, where districts like Wisconsin Rapids or Adams Friendship or even Spash, who, they do a great job, but their hands are tied behind their back. And so, that's kind of one of the areas that I'm going to be pushing and advocating for through the state budget process as it relates to K-12 education.
It seems like from the reporting, from the work that I've been able to research on this, it looks like you're obviously correct with what you're saying there, as well as a lot of our inner cities in the Milwaukee, the Madison area, the schools in there are being affected just as much as some of these rural communities. I think that there is obviously some chances here to fix that, make that better, but also find some commonality. We don't often have these connections between that type of, the kid growing up in that city and the kid growing up in a city like Rapids here. Finding those connections there hopefully creates a little more empathy and a little more understanding of, hey, we're all in this together. We're all trying to do the same thing for our kids. We're all trying to make sure that this next generation and the generation after that is that much smarter, that much better than us, and going to be able to do that much better of a job than we are. That's the job of adults.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that was a conversation I had with one of the organizations that has showed up at every one of the Joint Finance Committee public hearings, who are comprised of, students both in K-12 as well as higher education, who represent, minority populations. And, they came into my office this week and asked, well, what have you done to help, folks from the inner cities? I said, first and foremost, you know, making sure that we're providing pathways and opportunities for all Wisconsinites, and making sure that you have educational opportunities to ensure that your success isn't defined by the zip code that you grow up in. And, you know, doing what we can to help individuals get a leg up and try and break cycles of poverty and, you know, introduce them to, you know, what's out there, whether it's our great UW system, whether it's our great tech colleges like Mid-State or the trades that we have. I mean, last month I had the chance to go and spend a day on the job at the operator engineers facility down in Coloma. I mean, that is the whole point, and everything I have tried to drive home for the past 7 years is that we've got a lot of opportunity out there, and we need to do a better job of providing information and creating pathways for students to find what their aptitude is, and then really put them on a pathway for future success and to have a real successful career.
Talking to listeners and to get question ideas and things and just get feedback from the community, what do you guys want to ask Senator Tess? Not about what I want to ask you, what do they want? And it came up kind of organically, but the approach that we take to the budget, I should say the approach our politicians take to the budget. Do you and your colleagues, do you look at the budget as a pie? And, well, if we take from this, we have to add to here or vice versa, you know, that kind of thing. Or is it more about the budget is just kind of this, it has no real ceiling. Like, certainly we don't want to just spend, but it's not about so much as a ceiling as it is just being smart about finances.
Well, I think it's kind of a mix of both. I mean, we have to walk a very fine line and ensure that we craft a responsible budget that doesn't put future legislatures in a tough position. And so, you know, right now, you know, as we begin the process, we'll likely in early May take up some smaller agencies that don't have a huge impact on the overall state budget. And then come May 15th is when we should have new revenue numbers. And that should give us a pretty good indication as far as where we feel comfortable both at the state and then taking a look at the national forecast as far as, you know, where we're at financially and what's the health of the economy right now. Because if we were to start squeezing on the balloon right now, you're right. You know, that pie's only so big, you're going to start taking away from different areas. And what's more important is that we're going to start off of the base budget. Now, the governor introduced his budget, you know, back in February. And, you know, what concerns me and a number of my colleagues is that if we were to rubber stamp the governor's budget as is today, just in the first year of the biennium, if approved, just to get to a net balance of zero, we would have to see an increase in revenues of 6.6%. In year two of the governor's proposed budget, you would have to see an increase in revenues to get to a net balance of zero to over 12%. And historic trends, based on Fiscal Bureau's analysis over the last decade, our revenue growth has been anywhere between, you know, 3 to 4% over the last decade. So we just want to make sure that we build upon our current base budget and continue to make investments where it matters most, whether it's in K-12 education, whether it's within our healthcare system, trying to help our hospitals like Aspirus Riverview, who are dealing with low Medicaid reimbursements, to hopefully provide them some relief, making sure that our transportation continues to be a priority and emphasis, especially in outstate and rural areas of the state.
How close are the two sides when it comes to that budget that Governor Evers has proposed?
Well, I mean, that remains to be seen. I mean, we're still at the starting block right now, but, you know, obviously the governor has a budget that wants to spend, you know, $106 billion, which is a 17% increase over the budget that we passed last go around. And so, you know, you hear a lot of conversations about the $7 billion surplus that we have here in the state. And while we do, in fact, have a $7 billion surplus, I think it's important for us to note that that $7 billion surplus, about half of that is attributed to the nearly $57 billion the state of Wisconsin received from the federal government throughout the course and start of the pandemic. And then when you factor in inflation, that takes out another big chunk of that $7 billion surplus. And if we want to continue some of the programs, the cost to continue in areas like our Medicaid budget, that's a $500 million hit. The child care accounts program, a $340 million hit. If we want to continue the pay progression for Department of Corrections workers, that's another $400 million hit. So really, realistically, when you take those one-time dollars out, inflation out, the federal money, of actual new revenue that we feel we can safely invest without overextending ourselves is about $2.4 billion. And so we're trying to manage expectations as best that we can, because the last thing that we want to do is pass a budget that puts us into a $3 billion deficit going into fiscal year 27.
Speaking with State Senator Patrick Teston right now, and sir, you recently joined the Joint Finance Committee. Wanted to talk about that a little bit. Before we get too deep into it, though, let's explain to people what the Joint Finance Committee is.
So the Joint Finance Committee, it's been in existence for about 115 years now, and it is the most powerful legislative committee in the entire country. It's a joint committee where you've got members of both the Assembly and the Senate who are responsible for all things finances and appropriations here in the state. So, you know, anything that has a dollar sign on it, it runs itself right through the Joint Finance Committee. We also were responsible for crafting the two-year state budget. We're responsible for dealing with settlements, dealing with state dollars and cases, and how those are allocated. We have oversight and review of a number of different projects and things that occur. So it's a very, very powerful committee. It's a big responsibility, and really thankful to have a seat at the table, because this is where all the big decisions are made. And what's really unique is the fact that how well-positioned Central Wisconsin is based on just the breakdown of who serves on the Joint Finance Committee. I mean, Adams County has three individuals who represent portions of Adams County on the Joint Finance Committee. Myself, Senator Joan Ballwig, Representative Alex Dahlman, and then right next door, you know, you've got Representative Tony Kurtz, who represents Juneau County, and Co-Chair Howard Markline. So Central Wisconsin, and more importantly, rural Wisconsin, is very well represented on the Finance Committee, which in years past that wasn't the case, because it was always folks from Southeast Wisconsin or Madison and Milwaukee, and now we've got a far greater footprint, which I think is going to help advocate for some of the issues our rural areas of the state are facing.
I think we've touched on some of that, but what are some of those issues, and what are you and the committee doing about them?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we talked about education, how some of our rural districts are really struggling right now, and while they've been very financially prudent, you know, they need assistance. You know, we're going to be taking the lead point on the transportation budget, and so making sure that our not only our local roads, but more importantly, our agricultural heavy used roads get their opportunity to get repaired. And again, things like we've talked about over and over again, whether it's continued broadband expansion, making sure that we're providing more connectivity for individuals throughout the state. And then a big one for me, and will continue to be a big one for me, is making sure that our underserved areas and rural parts of the state, as it relates to healthcare, making sure that we get more providers in these areas, that we continue to support our long-term care facilities, and hopefully make significant advancements in the programs that educate our future workers within the healthcare system, our nurses, our CNAs, doctors, dentists. So my hope is that there's going to be a lot of conversations on how we can continue to advocate for outstate and do what we can to get providers in there and provide for these populations.
That's all? No, I'm joking. I'm kidding. I just had to lighten the moment for a second. I would like to ask, though, along with those things, is childcare one of the things that you guys are focusing on?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a big priority. And the reason I say that is, you know, every region of the state, they'll have their own version of their own lobby day where they'll come down. And you know, for instance, Synergy and Central Wisconsin Days were just down last month. We had folks from Door and Kewaunee County just down in my office yesterday, or 2 days ago, in fact. And child care in every single one of these groups has been number one or number two on their issue areas. And so, you know, what that looks like remains to be seen. Like I said, we're still in the early process, and I think we'll have a clearer picture once we have new revenue numbers and projections come May 15th. But I think, by and large, every single legislator down in Madison acknowledges that child care is a major issue and a huge barrier. In fact, last month when the Restaurant Association had their lobby day, I had a conversation with they're just outside the district, but they own three Culver's up in the Wausau area. Young couple, about my age, mid-30s, three kids. They spend $32,000 per year on child care. $32,000. That is a huge concern.
Yeah.
I don't know how people pay and afford for that. And so I do expect us to tackle that issue. What that looks like exactly remains to be seen, whether it's trying to create public-private partnerships or provide tax incentives or trying to help raise the wages for these child care workers. But something has to be done because this is a major hurdle and barrier for folks who want to get back into the workforce. Hard to get back to work if you can't afford child care and you got to stay home and watch your kids.
Well said. Recently, you met with Representatives Sarah Lemieux and George Stacey from the Ho-Chunk Nation legislator. You guys talked about a number of different things. Can you tell us a little bit about that conversation?
Yeah, well, I've always had a good working relationship with the Ho-Chunk Nation, and you know, it was great to get an update from the things that they're working on, and get an update on where kind of can stand with the Ho-Chunk and some of the issues that they're facing, which, as you're probably well aware, are some of the very same issues that we're discussing right now, child care and health care access and things like mental health. What was really neat is, towards the tail end of our conversation, they had mentioned that they recently bought a property, a house just east of Stevens Point that has a healing rock on it, which I haven't got a chance to go out there and take a look at it, but apparently this rock sometimes has water that bubbles up from it, and apparently the previous owners had told stories that they would sometimes hear things at night and see things at night, and so
I gotta check that out
really
too.
Good conversation.
That's great.
And the other thing that we've been working with the Ho-Chunk on for a number of years, and I'm hoping we can get something set up soon, is for me to do an on the job with them. And as a token of good faith, I've made the offer that if they want any historical artwork or artifact displayed in my office, that I'd be more than happy to do that. So when their members come down and meet, they can know that they've got a friend and partner in my office.
That's great to hear. You also recently met with the Carpenters Union last week. How did that go? What were some of the things you discussed with them?
Yeah, we had the Carpenters Union down. I think this was last month. It's hard to keep track of all the meetings and days. But it was a really good conversation. And, you know, they're dealing with the same issues that folks on who are non-union shops are dealing with, and that's a huge demand for labor. And, we talked about what can be done to, again, expand the trades, youth apprenticeship programs. And, you know, I think that's one of those key areas where we have that commonality and that common ground is, again, acknowledging the fact that we have a huge demographic problem. What's called the silver tsunami, our population that's getting older, is going to exponentially increase significantly over the next several years. And so we've got to do what we can to grow our own workforce and make sure that we retain that workforce here in the state, and primarily, hopefully, here in central Wisconsin. And so based on our conversations, I think we're all in agreement that anything that we can do to help expand our youth apprenticeship programs and get kids interested and involved in the trades is going to go a long way to ensure that careers like this remain viable and in supply here in the state.
Recently, also had some good conversations, it looks like, with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau. We're seeing some really good feedback from them about some of the things that they are developing, the bipartisan support that they are having with this. That's certainly noteworthy and needed for our farm and our ag industry. We all understand that how important that is here in Wisconsin. But another kind of like story inside the story there is the bipartisanism. The last two elections we've had in this state, it feels for me and for many of our listeners that the state itself is deciding to be more and more purple. And it's not so much that we're Democrat-Republican as it is the divisive Democrat or Republican. We're X-ing out of our politics here in this state a little bit more and more. And it's becoming a little bit more and more about the issues, it seems. Now, does it seem that way to you and your colleagues? Is that at the water cooler, you guys talking about these kind of things? Because I got to imagine after the last election, the last two elections, that there's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of, there's the community, the state is speaking. How are you guys listening?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. I mean, Wisconsin's a purple state. There's no question about that. I think with the exception of probably, the April Supreme Court election, we've had a number, probably a dozen or so statewide races going back the last several years that come down between 30,000 votes or less. And, you know, even in conversations that I've had, whether it's with Representative Shankland or some of my Democratic colleagues in the Senate, you know, I think we all kind of acknowledge that in Wisconsin, we're unique. And I even had a funny conversation with a national pollster not that long ago who came, and we were at an event together and, you know, talking about other states. And I asked him, like, you didn't mention Wisconsin. He just kind of chuckled. He's like, you guys are too hard to predict. I mean, you guys are like your weather. One day you're voting for conservatives. The next day you're voting for folks who are a little bit more liberal. And so, you know, I think that's what's unique about us is that, by and large, I think the vast majority of our voters here in the state of Wisconsin don't necessarily look at the letter behind someone's name. If they don't care if it's an R or a D, they vote on the person. And that's what matters most. And that's why, you know, for us, when we're up for re-election, you know, you see us out in the community. And not just every election year, but I try and be out in the community nonstop to keep my thumb on the pulse, to know what's going on, to know what's on people's minds, and use that to kind of inform how I approach, you know, my job and how I represent the 24th Senate District. And, you know, kind of gives me a good temperature on the mood of where things are at as we talk about issues like the state budget or we talk about individual bills. And so, you know, I think that's what's so unique about our state. And I think that's one of the things that makes it great.
Another one of the ways you do that is your On the Job series. Love talking about this with you. Recently, you were at the Operating Engineers Training Site in Coloma. How did that go? Did you get your hands dirty? How did you have some fun? How'd it go?
Yeah, it was a blast. I always like when it's more hands-on, I can get my hands dirty. I mean, it was really cool because, you know, during this time of year, although things are picking back up, as we see with not just the flowers are starting to come through the ground, but all those beautiful orange flowers that, you know, just dot our highways and our roads are popping up left and right. Mm-hmm. But during the downtime of the year, they use this facility to help train not just new workers, but to help reskill and upskill their existing workers. And, you know, it was really great talking to some of the students that were there taking classes. In fact, they even let me operate a backhoe, which was a ton of fun, and got to be on a paver. And don't tell OSHA this, but they actually let me use a large crane, which it gave me a much better appreciation when you see people moving buckets or equipment on a job site up and down and left to right, because they just had me dragging a chain a few inches off the ground through an obstacle course. And let's just say it's a good thing I'm not a crane operator, because look out.
Good to hear. And before we let you go, sir, I always like to do a little homework and check your social media and different things like that. I noticed the other day you put a Holocaust Remembrance Day post out for on the 18th of this month for Holocaust Remembrance Day. I just have to say I appreciate that stuff. It may seem simple and small to some people, but representation matters, support matters, and we greatly appreciate that, my fellow tribe members and I. thank you for that. And appreciate the time, as always, the conversation.
Yeah, well, happy to. And as always, James, appreciate the conversation and look forward to having a chat with you next month.
Yeah, we'll talk then. You have a good weekend.
You as well.
State Senator Patrick Teston joining us. He'll be back with us next month again. Right now, we're going to get ready for the kids from LHS. Lincoln High School Drama Department going to be joining us to talk about the SpongeBob musical in just a few right here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.